Well, hi there, Jonathan Doyle with you. Thank you for the privilege of your time. If you're listening to this, you are either in the audience as I gave the presentation or you've heard about it and somebody's passed this on to you. If you're there, thanks for coming out. If you're hearing this for the first time, as I've said, thanks for the privilege of your time. I've had the great pleasure over many years now, over a decade, of speaking to hundreds of thousands of people around the world on issues related to a whole bunch of stuff, sexuality formation, masculinity, relationships, and also the impact of pornography and what that's doing culturally to relationships. But this presentation and the summary of it that I'm doing for you now is really geared towards how we form our sons, how we form young men around the time of puberty into their sense of male sexuality. And you're going to notice in this brief presentation that I really will expand that meaning of sexuality. Often when we think of sexuality, we think of, you know, the plumbing or of teaching puberty to our younger children, but I want to broaden that perspective into the whole concept of relationships in general, what it means to be a fine man. I want to begin, as I do in the live presentation, by acknowledging differences. Now, I am giving this presentation as a practicing Catholic in a Catholic sort of venue to many Catholic parents. So the paradigm will be coming from there, but I acknowledge a lot of differences. I acknowledge you may not be a person of faith. As I talk about relationships, I acknowledge that many people will have had long-term, strong, stable marriages. Some won't. Some of you will be lone parenting. The thing I've learned over the years is that if you come into a room with a kind of an agenda about something like lone parenting or divorce, then no matter what I do up front, people are going to hear what they decided to hear before they came in. So in terms of divorce and all that sort of stuff, I judge no one. I don't know you. If you're listening to this, you could be listening to this anywhere in the world. But I do know that commitment to strong, stable marriage gives our kids the best opportunity to flourish in life. That doesn't sort of undermine the great work done by many lone parents who are doing a great job under often difficult circumstances. So I do want to acknowledge you. I do want to say there's a huge amount you can do. So basically, we have these differences in terms of even stuff like our parenting approach and how we want to raise young men, but there are things that unite us. And simply what unites us is that if you're listening to this, then you love your child. No matter where you stand on a religious or political spectrum, you love your son, you want the best for them, and you want them to be fine men. Now, I do a whole other presentation around love and the meaning of love, a deeper meaning. And I take the deeper sort of, I guess, definition of love, which is to will the good of the other, to will the good of the other. So often we emotivize love massively. We only look at its emotional component. But the deeper meaning, really coming from sort of Aristotle right through Thomas Aquinas, is to love is to want the good or good things to happen or flourishing to happen to your son. So that's what unites us. And why am I talking about this topic? Why did the school even put on this important night around puberty formation? Well, culturally, we don't do much about this at all. You know, we just don't talk about it. It's kind of, we assume that, you know, the school will do it or the kids will just, you know, figure it out somewhere. And with the advent of the internet and pornography, basically what's happening is in the absence of parents and especially fathers mentoring and discipling and guiding their sons, then internet-based pornography will tend to do that work for them. So the natural curiosity, as hormones kick in and as a young boy's sexuality begins to develop and flourish, if we're not in there in that space really mentoring and walking with them, then someone else will do it for us. So the point that I make in the presentation is that your son's actions and beliefs now, as he comes through this preteen and teen time period, are going to build his long-term beliefs and attitudes towards the other gender. So basically what they learn now, if they're socialized into a pornographic mindset, and depending on the data you look at, it's round about sort of 100% of boys will be exposed to pornography by the age of about 16. And often their age of exposure starts much, much younger. Now, Professor Marianne Layden from the University of Massachusetts, who I shared a platform with quite a few years ago now, makes the point that pornography is curriculum. You know, pornography is a teaching system, and people think that's ludicrous, but it presents a whole range of ideas and belief systems about human intimacy, how women are treated, all but that sort of stuff, and it's not neutral. And if we're not aware of that as fathers and parents and mothers, then that training system is going to be central in the lives of young boys. Now, when I was doing my second master's in marriage and family studies, I remember we were doing a lot of stuff on sort of what we call utilitarianism, which is the idea that the sexual value of a person is geared into the use they can provide for someone else. So a person's value is, you know, whether they can meet somebody else's sexual need. Now, I was thinking of, at that time, I don't know, look, when you're listening to this, but if you remember the TV program 2.5 Men with Charlie Sheen, I realized that that program at the time that I was studying was very influential. Roughly about 17 million viewers per episode in the US, 1.71 million viewers in Australia. And one day in a lecture, I sort of wrote down a few points that really there were three main ideas that keep coming through that program. I'll give them to you really quickly. One was that women exist for the purpose of sexual conquest. Every time a woman walked in the room, basically she wasn't framed as a person, as an individual with sort of ideas and hopes and dreams. She was framed as a potential sexual conquest. The second teaching system was that the most important thing about a woman was her body parts, the size of the body parts, and what men can do to the body parts. And they would constantly, in the dialogue, have these really juvenile jokes around, you know, body parts and different, you know, female body parts and what men could do to them and, you know, offensive names for body parts. And I realized that second idea, the most important thing about a woman being body parts, is also embedded deeply in pornography. If you look at you know, the concept of pornography, it's basically that a woman's body parts is the most important thing about who she is. So what makes something like 2.5 Men so powerful is that it's a pornographic belief system tied into a mainstream media format. So what's this got to do with your child and puberty? Well, quite simply, basically we're presenting our kids with this belief system around, you know, how men are sexually. And it's not neutral. I mean, 1.71 million viewers, we know that that's going to have a big effect. So the third thing that was in that program was the idea that commitment is death. Now, the commitment is death concept ties into, I guess, another principle that I will give a little bit of time to here, but basically it's this idea that the worst thing that could happen to a man is that he would be trapped by the woman, that, you know, committing to a relationship is the end of male freedom. Now, what we know from people like US sociologist Kay Himowitz in her really successful books recently is that it's the absolute opposite, is the truth. That, you know, basically the earlier a man commits to stable, permanent relationships, the faster he accumulates wealth, he has lower rates of heart disease, lower likelihood of gambling addictions and substance abuse. So what was happening was that programs like this were operating as formation systems that are shaping belief systems. So we want to know about that. And of course, we want to really frame a different belief system. And I guess the second reason it matters is that if our boys aren't formed in their sexuality, then there's obvious physical and emotional outcomes. Now, they can be sexually transmitted infections, pregnancy, and just emotional trauma from making poor decisions. Now, people, you know, what we've done is we've kind of forgotten the kind of psychological, emotional, spiritual parameters of sex and sexual intimacy and sexual relationships. And all we've done culturally is focus on the physical and, you know, sort of epidemiological issues such as, you know, sexually transmitted infections. So the whole cultural landscape of this, I think, is completely messed up, and it's about time that as parents and as leaders, we started to just get back into that space. You know, I'm not much for political correctness. I think it's time that we actually began to give things their correct names and basically say to our boys that, you know, if we can give you a great vision of male sexuality, of marriage, of fatherhood, then those are really good things. And then people reply, well, you know, that's just not what people do these days, and people don't, you know, get married at the same rates. And I'll put it this way. I mean, what the research in the US is showing us really conclusively is that we don't need to worry about divorce as much anymore because, you know, divorce rates are sort of around about 47% in the developed world, give or take. But the coming trend is that basically people avoid marriage altogether and go for serial relationships, just live-in relationships. Now, when those relationships break down, they've got a breakdown rate of around about 65 to 70%. That's from the University of Chicago. Children are powerfully impacted. But one of the huge studies out of the US shows us that marriage is increasingly becoming the kind of social organization of the wealthy. You know, what the affluent and sort of the wealthy and the educated class realize, whether they're conscious of it or not, is that marriage, stable marriage, tends to build wealth, it tends to build stability, whereas, you know, relationship breakdown, serial cohabitation, constant, you know, serial monogamy and breakups is increasingly becoming what sort of the less educated and the poor are doing. Now, that's pretty heavy research. It's quite confronting. So, you know, if you care about your son, you want to give him a paradigm for managing and controlling and being in control of his sexual decision making, because those decisions around marriage and relationships are really important ones. So that's some sort of big picture stuff about why we want to do this. The next simple concept I want to introduce is what we call, you know, one of the key problems is the dawn of pre-adulthood or delayed adulthood. So for most of human history, you basically, you know, sort of hit puberty, you were married off almost immediately because you tended to die by about 30 or 35. You know, infant mortality rates only plummeted sort of really around the start of the 20th century. So for most of human history, you died young, so you married very early, you had as many kids as possible, and the village or the tribe or the city or the town or the village had a big interest in making sure that you sort of reproduced and that you stepped into manhood very quickly. Now, all our affluence, technology and infant mortality stuff and, you know, our economies have massively changed that. So what we're seeing now is young men really delay the kind of sociological markers that they would have had for centuries, and they tend to avoid commitment and avoid settling down. So one of the graphs that I showed on that evening was, you know, in 1970, only 16% of 25 to 29-year-old males were unmarried. So one more time, 1970, only 16% of males between the ages of 25 to 29 were unmarried. Now, in 2010, that's just 40 years later. Now, think in terms of, you know, thousands of years of human development. Just 40 years later, it's gone from 16% to just under 60%. Now, people can have an opinion on that. And, you know, well, they don't have to get married straight away. But there are significant sort of sociological ramifications when sort of men and boys avoid stepping into those markers of manhood. So, you know, basically where this is what we call the man-boy concept. So this is guys that sort of 28, 29, 30, avoiding marriage altogether, living, you know, playing the PlayStation, pornography and pizza lifestyle and not stepping into sort of the key markers of manhood that we've seen throughout history. So I mentioned before that the dominant paradigm shift, of course, is also that what we're doing culturally is we're focusing on what I call genitals and epidemiology. When we talk to our boys around puberty and sexual development, if we talk to them at all, we talk about the body parts. Now, this is what the body parts do, and epidemiology, which is the study of disease. So basically say to them, look, here's how the plumbing works. Now, don't get anybody pregnant and don't get a disease. And what I want to suggest is definitely from a Catholic perspective, that is a massively impoverished view of what it means to be a human sexual person. I mean, think about it culturally. If all we're saying to our boys is, here's the plumbing, don't ask me any more questions, and don't get a disease. I mean, think of just, you know, if you're listening to this, you know, if you're an adult, you're in a marriage, then human sexual intercourse, human sexual intimacy is one of the most profoundly important experiences of your life. You know, it's the most, you know, think of Shakespeare, think of the great poetry throughout history, and we've reduced it to plumbing and disease. So the Catholic paradigm refers to some particular words that I want to share with you quickly, which is what we call an education in love. You know, not genitals and epidemiology, not plumbing and disease, but how do we educate our boys to love, in which their genital sexual development is put in that context, the context of how can we teach them to love, to see their bodies as a gift to another person, to see married sexual union as a gift in which they express themselves as a person and receive the full gift of another person. That's a much more compelling and beautiful vision. Now, I have a four-year-old son, and if I have to choose between, you know, plumbing and disease, or, you know, AJ, how can I teach you to be the most compassionate, loving, alive, sexual human person at the correct, at the right time in your life? And as parents, we don't hit this too early. That's definitely an issue. But that's the vision that I'm pursuing. So basically what's happened, at least in the Catholic historical context, is that, you know, the whole Catholic approach is to focus on you as parents. You know, the parents as primary educators of their own children. And historically, it was left to parents with a little bit of help from the school, maybe, and a little bit of input from the parish, or at least the school and the parish kind of stayed on message and just reinforced the general view that was being communicated by the parents. Now, of course, that has broken down massively at this particular moment in history. So what's sort of happened is that schools, especially in secular education, governments have tried to hijack that agenda. And I'll be really clear that a lot of times it is not with your best interests at heart. It can often be a highly progressive, highly sort of speculative approach to human sexuality that you may not agree with as a parent at all if you actually knew the sort of philosophical and anthropological, I guess, you know, basis, philosophical anthropology, the basis behind the sexual education program. If you really knew half of what was being taught in a school as a parent, you might find that pretty interesting. And if you, you know, completely, rabidly disagree with that, then you probably don't want to listen to the rest of this podcast, because I'm just going to take you through some of the key pieces of communication around the rights of parents and how the church, the Catholic Church, sees that role. So one of the things I love to do with parents is just to give them this concept, this definition of sexuality. Now, this comes from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It's paragraph 2332, 2332. And I want to read this to you. It says, "Sexuality affects all aspects of the human person in the unity of their body and soul. It especially concerns affectivity, the capacity to love and to procreate. And in a more general way, the aptitude for forming bonds of communion with others." So there's so much there. Basically saying that, your son is a sexual person, it affects all of who he is. Your son is a male engendered sexual human person. He's not female. So his maleness is distinct. It matters. It's important. It's not sort of, you know, what we call in philosophy, we don't say it's accidental. You know, something that's accidental is like your eye color. You know, your eye color is part of you, but it's what we call in philosophy an accident, an accidental component of your sense, your personhood. But you know, what we call constitutive, like an aspect such as sexuality is constitutive. So male sexuality is constitutive of what it means to be a male person. Female sexuality is constitutive, constitutes, it creates, it is embedded in the substratum, as the language we use often in philosophical anthropology. It's central to who you are. So, you know, rather than this focus on plumbing and body parts and disease, now we're going to do that. As parents, we want to talk about the body parts. We want to give them really solid information. We want to explain how, you know, for our boys at the right time, how the sperm cycle works, how, you know, how the female cycle works. We want them to know all the plumbing. We want them to be able to name body parts. And we want to give them that quality information, but we want to give it in a context of personhood, of love, of marriage, of intimacy. So it goes on to say, you know, this idea of love and forming bonds of communion and relationship with others. So a couple of quick things. This is drawn straight from the church documents about your rights as parents. That number one, your rights are original and primary, irreplaceable and this is that tough one from the US Constitution, inalienable. Inalienable. They can't be separated from you. They can't be replaced. Nobody can do this better than you. And I know you don't feel like that. As a parent, you'll often feel that, you know, this is really hard and surely just the school can do this better. No. If I came to your house and put on this great presentation, I would give your son some really good information and he could find it really interesting, but I won't be there day to day. I won't be there in the ins and outs, moments, decisions, what's on TV and all the different filters that come through in their life around what it means to be a male sexual human person and to love. So from the church documents, the role of others is subsidiary and subordinate. So you've got to claim that back as a parent. You've really got to stand up and take back your power to educate in matters of sexuality. Now, as I said in the live event, you know, often for men particularly, we never received much formation. So it's very hard for us to know what to do. But, you know, we've got to have courage. We've got to step in there. And, you know, with this podcast underneath it, I put a bunch of resources in there and links to books. Become an expert. Listen to stuff. Learn more. Just keep going and going until you really learn, you know, how to do this. So because everybody else's rights, parent, other parents, teachers, you know, subsidiary, subordinate. A quote here from one of the church documents, The Truth and Meaning of Human Sexuality. The church holds that it's her duty to give parents back confidence in their own capabilities and help them to carry out their own task. It's you as parent that matters, not the church. We, you know, we can support it, we can give you information, but really, another quote here from the document, Gratissimum Sane, it says, parents are the first and most important educators of their children, and they possess a fundamental competency in this area. They are educators because they are parents. So take some confidence from listening to this. I want to give you a couple more to finish. When social and moral deterioration is present, parents are urged to ask for more and to propose more. They cannot be satisfied with avoiding the worst, that their children do not take drugs or commit crimes. You know, how many times do you hear people say, you know, I just want my child, as long as they're not doing anything, you know, can we just lift the vision a bit here? Can we stop the idea that as long as my child isn't doing drugs or in prison, somehow everything's okay? And the other one, if I could be really blunt, is I want to stop the idea that your job, you could say, well, I'm really, you know, what I want is I want my child to be happy. No, you don't. Friends, if you forget everything else on this podcast, you don't want your child to be happy, or at least you don't want that to be the focus of your parenting. Now, that's confronting. I want to flesh that out a little bit. I hear it all the time. I just want them to be happy. You know, whatever decision, as long as they're happy with it. Bollocks. It's not true. You know, that's crazy talk. You don't want your child to be happy if they're happy doing something really dangerous or foolish or crazy or something that's going to hurt them down the line. Now, the deep roots of this are basically that culturally, we've come to believe that happiness is a feeling state. And as long as we feel happy, then everything's okay. Well, the problem with that logic is you can apply it to axe murderers. Like if an axe murderer feels good about axe murdering, or a heroin addict feels good about injecting heroin, then we can't make someone's feeling state the most, you know, central aspect of whether something's the right thing to do or not. Now, stay with me on this. The real meaning of the word happiness goes way back to Aristotle. You know, this is 5th century Athens, 2,500 years ago. You know, for the Greeks, and until about the sort of round about the time of the French Revolution, the whole of Western history up to that point, happiness meant, concentrate, listen to this, happiness meant virtue. The happy person was the virtuous person. What's virtue? An habitual disposition to do the good. The habit of doing the good or the right thing. Now, in the Catholic tradition, we talk about prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. Now, if you're listening to this going, dude, we just want to hear about puberty. No, you don't. Because you can get a book and you can learn about plumbing and you can hand that book to your child, but that is not the fullness of your vocation as a parent. Virtue. Prudence, can they make prudential, wise decisions using their reason and their spirituality and their, and yes, definitely their emotions as part of their decision making? You know, justice, can they give to another person what is due to them because of what they are? Can your son love young women at the, you know, when he comes into a relationship? Can he appreciate and respect the fullness of who they are? Well, he's going to struggle with that if he's just had 10 or 15 years of pornography several times a week. Temperance, fortitude, courage. So you don't want your child to be happy. You want your son to be virtuous. And you want him to do that by teaching him and coaching him in endless little situations to do what is right. You know, and that may not be popular, and that may not be politically correct. If you don't like it, turn off the podcast. If you do, then I want you to be encouraged, because this is the good news of the parenting that we need to start doing. And it's tough, and it's challenging, and it's exhausting, but if we just keep doing it, we're going to see our sons turn into extraordinary young men. So my job with AJ and with my other kids is to form him in virtue. And of course, you know, the most challenging thing for us as parents is that it's pretty hard to form your child in virtue if we're not living it ourselves. Now, we don't have to be perfect. We don't have to have it totally figured out. And that's why, again, from a Catholic perspective, the church realizes that we need sacraments, we need prayer, we need to, you know, attend church and grow spiritually and emotionally and psychologically and morally so that we can model that to our kids. So there's a huge amount of stuff that I could do here. And basically, I just want to hit a couple of high points. Underneath the podcast here, there's links to other talks that I've done, especially some big ones that I've done in Sydney, that kind of, you know, a three-part process where you can get a whole bunch more information. But I want to hit a couple of high points here around the strategy phase of things that we can actually do, both in sort of puberty formation and, of course, in just general parenting of our sons. But, you know, if you took one thing away from this podcast, is to take away this idea that no one can do this better than you. And, you know, what a rare and incredible thing you could do in your life in terms of raising a great son. So in terms of some strategies, one of the things I want to do is bring us back to a really important concept that we've dropped in Western culture, which is this concept around initiation. So you can hear me talk about this on the other podcast underneath here, but to hit it for you quickly, what we've dropped culturally is we don't bring boys into manhood deliberately and consciously. So all the tribal cultures, of course, did the initiation process. So at a certain point, the community of men would take the boy away and he would go through an initiation process and he would come back. And the purpose of this was to make him useful. The purpose of this was to say, right, you're not a boy anymore. You can't just be, you know, you can't be the focus of getting everything from everybody else and everybody meeting your needs. You are now transitioning from boy into man, and we're going to do this as a community of men. I'm going to do this deliberately. And as I talk here about, you know, very much about men, I want to do two things. Firstly is to acknowledge the incredible work of mums. You know, if you're a mother and you're listening to this, the next part I am going to talk a little bit about dads. But if you're a mother, you know, you provide so much. You provide great communication and nurture and relationship, and, you know, you do amazing work. But one of the things that I really want to sort of capture here is this season of transition when a boy moves from little boy into slowly coming towards the community of men. Mums have to release a little bit. Mums have to step back, and they have to allow dad to step in. Now, if you're a lone parent, please do not hear this the wrong way. What you need to do is get the help of other good men, coaches, you know, brothers, uncles, whatever it is. But if you're a single mother, please, you have done incredible work. You do amazing work. Don't hear this the wrong way. But when he becomes into this phase of young manhood, you've got to get good men around him. And my advice to women here is don't be polite about it. Don't kind of just vaguely say, well, maybe, possibly, could you spend a little bit of time? Be very direct. Explain to good men that your son knows that you want him to step in. So speaking now of the fathers, you've got this incredible role. You've got to step up. So a four-stage process in initiation, and you can hear this in more detail on the other podcast, but basically step one is that we remove him from the community. So you have to take your son away. So if this is hard for you, the tip that I give is do it with other men or do it with one of the incredible groups such as Darren Lewis, who I'll put a link to Darren's website. He does these, you know, father-son adventures, father-daughter adventures that are just brilliant. I have no commercial affiliation with Darren's stuff, but I want to really advocate for what he's doing. I want you to visit his website and I want you to make time to do this with your son or daughter as a father. We separate them from the community. Number two, we put them in something called liminal space, which is traditionally in the tribal stuff, they would separate the boy out and he would be taken out of his comfort zone so that all his patterns, the ways that he would run, you know, he would use bravado or foul language or whatever, they'd put him in a space where none of that could be used, which was quite unsettling for the boy. Stage three, they would test him. So he would be, you know, depending on the tribe, all sorts of testing would be done. So now we can do, you know, bushwalks and surfing adventures or the Kokoda Trail, whatever it is, we've got to test our sons in some way that, you know, it's the question of have they got what it takes? And then finally, they return to the community as a new member with a new identity. Okay, so what I wanted to do now was to talk a little bit more on the strategy side. Now, this podcast is a summary. So if you're listening to this and you want to find out about the puberty stuff, just go across to puberty.co, and you can buy and download our entire online puberty program, which is just fantastic. So that can that's the practical side. It gives you DVD stuff. It gives you books to print out, workbooks for your child. The whole thing's there. So on the strategy side of puberty, go across to puberty.co and get yourself access. There's one for the daughter as well, so boys and girls packs are there. What I want to do is give you some general parenting stuff here. And again, underneath here, there'll be a whole bunch of other links you can look at. Step one is to really take the space, become an expert, get around your son and or daughter and really learn and read. So I've tried to give you a book list underneath this podcast. The other place you can go is another website that I have is stopusingpornography.com, stopusingpornography.com. Now, that is a huge website. You buy access to it, and it's just got a huge amount of video and teaching stuff on understanding how pornography works. So if you've got a son, you need to know that issue, so check that one out. But become an expert, read books, you know, find the right blogs, really decide that in this season you are going to become an expert and what it takes to really walk your son or daughter through this time. Seriously consider, excuse me, the initiation process, because if you have a son, that initiation process is really crucial. Make sure, here's the next tip, that they can tell you anything. One of the crucial things you want to do in this parenting season when they come out of young childhood into adolescence is to make sure the quality of the relationship is there so that they can always tell you anything. So that's really crucial, because when they go through these big changes or they see pornography or something happens in terms of relationships or sexual decision making, the last thing you want is for them to not tell you. So you want to build this belief system from a young age that no matter what they did, they can tell you anything. So once you get that one down, next one is make your home the hub. Make your home the hub. So this means, you know, basically they come through childhood into adolescence, they're really in the process of identity formation. So they're going to deeply go into forming identity. And what that will do is often take them out into peer group. And that's a healthy process as they start to look around for a group of fellow travelers, you know, their peers with whom they identify. But what you want to do is make your home the place where kids really want to come. So that do everything you can. Get a pool table or an old table tennis table, whatever you can do to make your home a place where teenagers really want to come. Now, next point, be physical. As your sons particularly come through boyhood and adolescence, we can sometimes forget to be really physical with them and just drift away and not be as physically engaged with them. I want you to be really physical, keep wrestling, keep playing with them, be affectionate physically. Next tip, if you have a son, you could probably do this with a daughter as well. Consider a major shared project. You know, often fathers and sons, if they just got something they can really sink their teeth into together, a car project or building something can be really exciting. Another really simple one is just to state the obvious, which is just to be with them. Three simple words, be with them. You know, it's such a big time in their lives and we can get so busy, we can forget the sort of basics of just making it a real priority to be with them. So as parents and as fathers particularly, just to remember that, yeah, you might be out there as a dad changing the world, but you got to make this time just to be with them. You know, and it doesn't have to be every experience, doesn't have to be the most incredible thing. Sometimes it's just watching a movie together on the couch, or just something simple where you are with them constantly at this, you know, at this crucial time in their life, not smothering them, because yes, they are doing that season of identity formation, but just making it a priority to be with them. For our boys, as much physical activity as possible, really simple one there, but, you know, years ago, Karen and I, when we were newly married, we were working at a remote area boarding school, and I looked after 60 teenage boys, and the school had a really good swimming program for training, you know, swimmers, and some of them have gone a long way. And these guys would swim from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every day, and then again for an hour and a half at least every afternoon. Now, we never had any issues with these guys because they were just exhausted. They just ate, swam, and studied, and that was it. So often, you know, like our boys, you know, they can deal with sort of depression and all sorts of things, and there can be other reasons for that. But there's plenty of great evidence that having, you know, lots of physical activity and exercise, they may not thank you for it sometimes, but as much that, you know, do as much as you can to stimulate that interest. Another simple one, when it comes to, and it's not something I've talked a great deal about in this one, but mobile phones, social media, little idea is to have a box in your kitchen, and every phone in the house must be in the box by 9 p.m. Now, you have to understand that research tells us that the majority of mobile phone or smartphone usage by young people takes place between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. So often, you know, the assumption that they're asleep or the phone is turned off can sometimes be a bit off the mark. So just having that place where all the phones are in there by 9. Now, when you do this sort of stuff, you're not going to be popular, but you've got to make a decision that your job is not to be popular. And if it happens, well, that's a bonus and that's fantastic. But if it doesn't happen, then, you know, your job's to be a great parent, to form virtue and character. And, you know, they won't thank you, but after a few weeks, they'll just tell their friends that if they haven't, you know, if it's not done by 9 o'clock, it's not done. Last one is just that boys associate emotion with movement. Boys associate emotion with movement. So often if you just make a boy sit down, and teachers know this, that if you just demand they answer questions and how are you feeling and why did you do this and what happened, you won't get much. But sometimes just passing a ball with them, or mums sometimes say that driving in a car with them on the way home from school can sometimes just be a really simple way, you know, that the boys will open up. So sometimes as a dad, you just got to throw a footy or a tennis ball or just go for a walk or do something physical, because then you can start to really find out what's going on inside them. Now, there should be, if I've got this right, there should be a comment box right at the bottom of this post on this page. And if you've got a great idea as a parent, something that you've seen work in terms of development, or you want to share some wisdom on anything I've said, then please post a comment down the very bottom, and you know, people can get your insights too. So that is a lot of stuff. There's a whole bunch. It's a big picture thing there. There's a lot of links underneath here of other stuff you can do and look at, talks that I've done. But I just really want to encourage you. I want to finish off by just encouraging you as a parent, and especially as a man speaking to men too. And you know, mums, you do amazing work, and thank you for the incredible work that mums do. But a real passion of mine has been to just encourage the fathers, encourage the men to really step up into your son's life, because if you don't do this, somebody else will do it for you. So post a comment, share this link with friends. It's all free. Just send this stuff out to other parents and say, hey, have a listen to this. If you'd like me to come and speak at another event, I do a lot of stuff across corporate and business and motivation and different things. So if you'd like me to speak somewhere else, get in touch with me. Anything else that I can do to help, please hit me up on social, or you can email me direct at jd@choices.com.au. But be encouraged. Get up there. Get in that space. I know it can be tough sometimes, but no one can do this better than you. I believe that if you just claim that simple truth, so much can happen. I'm Jonathan Doyle. Thank you for the privilege of your time, and I really hope that I do get to speak to you again really soon.